The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
Now, granted, it took 2 days to take control of the airport. We have control of the airport now.
Still a lot of pandemonium outside the airport.
Well, there is, but look, but no one's being killed right now. God forgive me if I'm wrong about that, but no one's being killed right now. People are, we got 1,000 somewhere, 1,200 out yesterday, a couple thousand a day, and it's increasing. We're going to get those people out.
But we've all seen the pictures. We've seen those hundreds of people packed into a C-17. We've seen Afghans falling.
That was 4 days ago, 5 days ago.
What did you think when you first saw those pictures?
What I thought was we have to gain control of this. We have to move this more quickly. We have to move in a way in which we can take control of that airport. And we did.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, that's, of course, a conversation with George Stephanopoulos from ABC and the president several days ago. You know, was it a week ago, Maggie? How long ago? It was about a week ago that they had that. A lot has changed in a week. I mean, a lot has changed in a week, that's for sure. And the president is dealing with really a tumultuous moment in his presidency. Of course, yesterday's bombings in Kabul were just devastating, and it's taking its toll. The one airport that we have access to right now, the one airport, it killed, you know, a dozen service members, injured another 15, killed nearly 170 Afghans, and they were all waiting at the gate, just trying to get out of the country, relying on the United States to honor our word, to get them to freedom so they can escape Taliban rule. At yesterday's press conference, the president said that, you know, he took the blame for it. A reporter there said to him, you know, do you accept responsibility? And his answer was good. I thought his answer was point on initially. He says, yes, I bear responsibility for fundamentally all that has happened. But then there was a caveat, right? Then he goes on and he says, he went on to deflect, I guess, the problem. He pointed the finger at President Trump. He says, you know as well as I do that the former president made the deal with the Taliban. Listen to what he said.
Mr. President, there had not been a U.S. service member killed in combat in Afghanistan since February of 2020. You set a deadline, you pulled troops out, you sent troops back in, and now 12 Marines are dead. You said the buck stops with you. Do you bear any responsibility for the way that things have unfolded in the last 2 weeks?
I bear responsibility for fundamentally all that's happened of late. But here's the deal. You know, I wish you'd one day say these things. You know as well as I do that the former president made a deal with the Taliban that he would get all American forces out of Afghanistan by May 1. In return, the commitment was made, and that was a year before. In return, he was given a commitment that the Taliban would continue to attack others, but would not attack any American forces.
All right, that was the president. What he didn't talk about, of course, is how that withdrawal would have been conducted by President Trump. And that really, that is the key issue here. I mean, more than likely, President Trump would not have given a list of the names of American citizens and Afghans, right, who worked with our nation, with America, over the last year to the Taliban. I don't get that. That's just me personally. As I watch this unfold, as I'm an observer, I often wonder where common sense is, right? I mean, sometimes common sense should be the lens in which we look through this. Rationality. I mean, why would you give the names of people who are outside your perimeter, where there are, you know, where their lives will be not only in jeopardy, but those same people will be hunted, tortured, and they're going to try to get other names. It's like putting a target on their back. And the president admitted that, you know, he actually did that so the Taliban would have a list of names and they could allow people through the checkpoint at the airport. So listen to this, a little bit more from the president.
There are reports that U.S. officials provided the Taliban with names of Americans and Afghan officials to evacuate. Were you aware of that? Did that happen? And then, sir, did you personally reject a recommendation to hold or to recapture Bagram Air Force Base?
There are certain circumstances where we've gotten information, and quite frankly, sometimes from some of you, saying, you know of such and such a group of people or trying to get out, they're on a bus, they're moving from other people. And this is their location. And there have been occasions when our military has contacted their military counterparts in the Taliban and said, this, for example, this bus is coming through with X number of people on it, made up of the following group of people. We want you to let that bus or that group through. So yes, there have been occasions like that. And to the best of my knowledge, in those cases, the bulk of that has occurred, they've been let through. But I can't tell you with any certitude that there's actually been a list of names. I know there may have been, but I know of no circumstance. It doesn't mean it didn't exist. That here's the names of 12 people, they're coming, let them through. It could very well have happened.
All right, that was the president. There was one defense official who I heard said, look, this whole approach of giving a list of names of not just Afghans, but Americans to a group of terrorists, it just put all those Afghans on a kill list, you know, because we're going to get our Americans out. I don't know if we're going to get all the Afghans out. And again, I think this 31-day, I've been saying it for several days, I will be shocked if we you know, pull up our tents, we bug out on the 31st and we leave people behind. I just find that hard to believe. I know there's a lot of other initiatives that are taking place outside the military to fly in to get people to safety. But on another note, I mean, this is first, when I sit back here and I look at this is humiliating. It's humiliating to our country. We're a great nation. We uphold freedoms and liberties. We're generous to the world. We have the greatest military. And we take a knee to this terrorist group. I think it's humiliating as a nation amongst our world leaders, amongst others. People look to the United States of America for what should be virtue and its leadership and its values. We are losing prestige in the world. The Taliban has now secured access to something that I think a lot more a lot more tangible than cities or even airports. You know what they have? I saw a story earlier today. They have secured the world's largest deposit of lithium. And you know what lithium is, right? It's needed, of course, in ion batteries that are used to store and to release electrical energy in an environmentally friendly way. I mean, think of how many, lithium batteries are out there, right? The world's largest deposit of it. So now think about this. Just zoom out for a second because nobody's talking about this. With the Taliban controlling the largest deposit of this stuff, and with China now cozying up to the Taliban, that's going to give China an even bigger corner on the market than they already have and already dominate. And speaking of China, one other note here, just speaking about how we have lost a lot of credibility. We've lost a lot of cachet, I think, also just with, with some of the other countries we're supposed to be defending. China is running massive war games right now. Do you know where they're running them? I've been talking about Taiwan a lot, right? This is a very sensitive area. China told Taiwan, in essence, hey, Taiwan, take a look at Afghanistan. See how your protector treats its friends. I mean, look at these Afghanis. Look what's happening to the citizens there. So if you're in Taiwan, you're seeing how the U.S. is, trying to get the heck out of Dodge, how people are on the other side of the wall, how bombs are going off, how people are feeling betrayed. What would you be thinking? According to the Washington Free Beacon, People's Liberation Army, Navy forces are conducting drills in the South China Sea right now, in the Yellow Sea. And there's a strait there near Korea as well. These intense drills come shortly after another set of military exercises off the coast of Taiwan was intended to achieve to help China ultimately reach or achieve a supremacy in a potential showdown with the United States and Taiwan in response to recent activity in the China Sea. One former Chinese colonel saying, "Hey, before I tell you about that, let me back up. I want to play a piece of audio for you too. This was troubling. I mean, this should really be troubling for everybody." I don't know if you remember. I shared this about a week or two ago. I mean, it was last week, Maggie. When did we play this? Maybe it was last week. It wasn't that long ago. That China had threatened Japan over security talks that were taking place between Japan and Taiwan, because Japan said, look, we're going to go in there. When America goes in, we've got their back. We've got Taiwan's back. So the Chinese foreign ministry spokesperson said, yeah, you do that, we're going to annihilate you. Here's what Asia Today had to say about it. Listen to this report.
China is again urging against domestic interference after Japan's ruling party held virtual talks with Taiwan's Democratic Progressive Party. They say the meeting touched on semiconductors and the mainland's military activities. Beijing strongly opposes countries conducting formal exchanges with Taiwan, reiterating that the island is an inalienable part of China.
The Taiwan issue is related to the political foundation of China-Japan relations. Japan bears historical responsibilities on the Taiwan issue for the crimes it committed against the Chinese people. The Japanese government should be cautious with its words and actions when it comes to Taiwan. We demand that Japan stop interfering in China's domestic affairs and stop sending wrong signals to independence forces in Taiwan.
All right, so it wasn't quite the quip. That's news from today, as Maggie was telling me. About 2 weeks ago, they threatened to use nuclear weapons against Japan, you know, to pretty much annihilate them. So you got a major presence there in Asia threatening to annihilate one of its neighbors if they get involved in this Taiwan mix. And then you see just days later what happens. Huge military exercises. This coming on the eve of what looks like the U.S. taking a knee to the Taliban and putting his tail between his leg and trying to get the heck out of Dodge. So we'll see what happens. You know, I always call you to prayer for these situations to bring peace. It could be a lot of saber rattling going on right now, but I'm telling you, if I was some of these other nations that depended on the U.S. and its word, it does give you a little bit of pause. And again, I'll go back. I know the president has this self-imposed date for the 31st. I think we're going to go well beyond that. We're not going to abandon U.S. troops. We're not going to abandon U.S. citizens. We're not going to abandon those people. I think it would be the death knell of his whole presidency. I just can't see that happening. But again, I go back to the psychology behind it. I think they're saying that in a way to, just keep the Taliban at bay so they'll let U.S. Citizens through. We'll see what happens on the 31st. That's right around the corner. One final note here. I'm going to be joined by Luke Wake, who's going to be stopping by as well. The Supreme Court is going to be hearing a major, major abortion case this fall. And this might fly under your radar. Dobbs versus Jackson Women's Health Organization is going to be coming up next month. They're going to be considering whether or not to hear two more pro-life cases. I've said it before. I'll say it again. I believe this completely. Roe v. Wade is bad law. And it will eventually fall. And, of course, then the battle goes to states. But one from Missouri, one of these cases, bans abortion after 8 weeks of pregnancy. And it also bans abortion for Down syndrome. You know, that's so high right now. There's some countries where it's practically been eradicated, Down syndrome. Why? Because when a mother finds out she might have a Down child, she has an abortion, right? Denmark is that country that... of course, unfortunately, has made that mistake. The other case comes from Arkansas, and their law also bans abortion because of Down syndrome. So I think we're moving in the right direction. Let's see how these cases make their way. But, you know, when the pandemic started and the lockdowns took place, right, millions of people found themselves suddenly at home, many people out of work. So the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC, they issued a directive, and they told landlords that they could not evict tenants for non-payment of rent. So I don't know whether you own some rental properties or maybe that's how you feed your family or if that's your big business. A lot of people supplement income by being a landlord. And some people invested a lot of money and time into that, and that's their retirement plan. And all of a sudden COVID hits and payments dry up. I saw one headline where a landlord is going to become a homeless person because tenants weren't paying him. He just couldn't keep the mortgage up. The bank didn't care. The CDC claimed, look, they didn't want the spread of COVID-19 by people moving around because they were losing their homes or ending up on the streets. That would spread the disease as well. So, we saw landlords in a very precarious situation. So they sued the CDC because they were left holding the bag, right? And then the landlords claimed in court that the CDC did not have the authority to do what they did. And earlier this summer, the Supreme Court would have ruled in their favor, except... you might remember Justice Brett Kavanaugh wrote that since the moratorium was ending in 10 days, It was really a just a moot point. The Biden administration, they tried again, and the CDC imposed another moratorium. This time it was immediately brought to court and was expedited through the judicial system to the Supreme Court. And this time the court ruled, the justices there, it shook out 6-3, that Congress has to specifically give CDC that authority. So here to give us some perspective on this and what it might mean to you as a landlord is Luke Wake. He's an attorney at the Pacific Legal Foundation working in their separation of powers practice group, and you can find them at pacificlegal.org. Hey, Luke, thank you for your time. Good afternoon.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. Anytime.
What was the basis of this CDC thinking? You know, they can impose a moratorium. I know it has had a profound impact on a lot of landlords, a lot of people not being able to pay their own mortgages, and they find themselves behind right now. So what was the rationale for the CDC, and where are these landlords today?
Yeah, they invoked this statute that's been around since 1945, the Public Service Health Act, which is really authorizes the CDC to do conventional disease control measures, and there's just one line in there that says something to the effect that the CDC director may issue regulation as deemed necessary to control the spread of contagious disease. And if you just look at that in isolation, that sounds like an extraordinarily broad grant of authority to do like anything under the sun that they might want to do. But then if you read the whole statute in context, in fact, if you read the very next line, it's very clear that Congress had in mind not just an open-ended grant of authority for CDC to do anything, but a grant of authority for CDC to take conventional disease control measures, things like fumigating, say, rail cars or airports or things like that, or pest extermination, things like that. They never envisioned anything on the scale of a national eviction moratorium. And in fact, the federal courts have unanimously said, even before the Supreme Court said this, unanimously had held that they lacked authority to do this. And if we were to embrace the CDC's expansive interpretation, that there really would be limits, that CDC would have at that point, quote, near dictatorial power through the duration of the pandemic. And that would include the power to shut down businesses, as we saw the states from the governors. So pretty wild.
Yeah, you're not kidding. The Biden administration also knew that, I think they knew it was unconstitutional, but they did it anyway. What was the mindset behind that? Isn't that illegal? And should they be sanctioned for it? I mean, what comes from this?
Yeah, I mean, it was really shocking and sort of a slap in the face to the rule of law.
Yeah.
The administration admitted repeatedly that the CDC lacked statutory authority, that they were finally coming to recognize that in July, which is why they asked the Supreme or the Congress to pass a moratorium by statute, because they just finally realized after you had so many courts, including the Supreme Court, signal where they were going to go, that they needed Congress to act. They didn't have authority to do it on their own. And nonetheless, because what you saw, this wave of protests from the president's own party and so forth, and tenants' rights groups, they let the moratorium lapse for 3 days, and then at the end of July, and then August 3rd, they renewed it. And on the very day they renewed it, the president acknowledged, well, the bulk of constitutional scholarship says that this is probably illegal, but, and I'm only roughly paraphrasing, he went on to say, but this is still worth doing because it's going to take time for the litigation to play out, and that's time that we can achieve our immediate political goals. It was a realpolitik sort of cynical ploy, if you will, and the courts ultimately didn't stand for it, and we actually filed immediately when that happened. We moved for an injunction, and we're bringing two cases. We had one in Ohio where the first case to hold that the CDC lacked authority, but the other case we have out of Louisiana is up on appeal. And we moved again for an injunction, which we just got today on the heels of that Supreme Court case. So now the CDC is blocked.
Makes sense. I'm curious. Three liberal judges dissented on this. I mean, what was their reasoning behind it? What's their rationale?
they dissented primarily because they thought that, I mean, the precise question that the court was dealing with was not definitively to decide these lawsuits, but was actually about whether or not this case, the Alabama Realtors Association case, was decided in the DC District Court, ruled in favor of the landlords.
Yep.
But the decision was put on pause. The legal term is it was stayed while the government was appealing. The decision was stayed, meaning that the landlords could not take advantage of that decision. They could not begin evicting. And so the landlords then were asking the Supreme Court to lift that stay. And so the dissenting justice has had pretty hyper-technical arguments for right. why they thought that the stay should have remained in place, and seemed to think that maybe there's some way that this could be upheld. But right. again, the problem with saying that CDC could do this, if you were to entertain that line of thought, is that it would mean that there were no limits. The CDC has never been able to articulate any sort of limitation yeah. on its power.
Yeah, that makes total sense. Hey, Luke, Pacific Legal, you guys are writing about this. Is there more information if people want to get plugged into it?
Yeah, we have a lot of information about our efforts to rein in the regulatory state in general yeah. On the PLF website, pacificlegal.org, as well as we have a blog where just today we're just going to 5 minutes or so be posting more about this decision on the PLF official blog.
Well, I appreciate your time, and I appreciate all that you're doing there. So we'll send people there to pacificlegal.org for more info, and thanks for clearing it up for us, Luke. Always good to have you here.
Yeah, a pleasure. Thank you, sir.
That's Luke Wake. He's an attorney at the Pacific Legal Foundation, and check him out. It's about 25 minutes after the hour. I have to take a short pause here. When we come back, deal with another issue I think you will find quite revealing. But before I do, I want to go ahead and just recommend something for you. It's free. I've talked about it several times already this week. I actually endorsed Father Rocky's book on marriage insurance. And he wrote a book. I think you'll like it. I do. I mean, if you are dating, I think it's a good read. It's just giving you some great strategies. If you're engaged, it's great strategies. If you are married, some great insights, right? I think we're all called to holiness. And the vocation of marriage is such a gift. It really is. God calls us to different missions, different paths in life. And a majority of people are called to the married life. But Satan hates marriage. He told St. Faustina or Sister Lucia dos Santos from Fatima. She recorded and wrote that the final confrontation is going to be over, marriage and family. He knows that through marriage and by being open to life, by procreating, by having family, we're such a reflection of the Blessed Trinity. And he wants to destroy life. You see that. He wants to destroy marriage. You see that. So, and it's easy to fall into a lot of traps, a lot of misconceptions that are out there today in the culture. So Father wrote this book, and he came up with what he calls, marriage insurance. I like it. 12 rules he came up by. And he put them in a book, and I'll tell you what, they'll send it to your doorstep. They'll put it in your mailbox. It's free, no shipping, no handling, no charges. So if you know somebody getting married, or you just want a good read, or you want to leave it at the church, or you want to do something else with it, you can simply go to relevantradio.com/marriage. That's relevantradio.com/marriage, and you can pick up the book for free. Father's consulted a lot of different people in writing that book, and I think, it can't hurt. These are strategies that will help you have a happy, holy marriage. I'll be right back.
Unashamed of the truth. It's the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio. Unashamed of the truth.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
News you won't get anywhere else.
I'm addicted to Relevant Radio. Is what I am.
Stay with us.
Good afternoon, Drew.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio and at relevantradio.com.
Yeah, hey, thanks for joining me. Coming up in about 30 minutes, we'll pray the chaplet, tell others about it, and we'll connect then. If you're just joining me right now, we are taking a look, of course, at what was unfolding in Afghanistan, what our global image is to the world, how other countries who depend on us for protection, like Taiwan, are seeing, of course, activity in the South China Sea. China's having these huge military exercises. And then you wonder about global terrorism, the rise of it, and whether or not we're going to see it against the West. I also think about our southern border. Our border is relatively porous. you can see that, right? I mean, that's really kind of an understatement. Really, I hope we'll never, ever see another 9/11. But now that the U.S. is out of Afghanistan, it's really obvious that the graveyard of empires, as they call it, and that makes so much sense, doesn't it? I mean, look at the nations that have been ineffectual when they went into that country. It's famously called the graveyard of empires. I think, given another name today, it's now been called a terrorist haven. That's really what it should be. I mean, the U.S. had trouble, the Hun had trouble, Russia had trouble. Okay, so one thing for a military, but now it's become a nest, if you will, for terrorists. The Taliban will become the governing party of the country, and that's going to mean a horrific imposition of Sharia law. And I'll talk more about this in the days ahead. We talked a little bit about Sharia last week or earlier in the week. You may not be familiar with what that means on the people, but Al-Qaeda and ISIS are also present in the country. So it's going to be a tough situation. Taliban's self-proclaimed head of security in Kabul is wanted by the U.S. as a terrorist. He's off right now. They're offering a $5 million reward for information leading to his capture. There was an interview done on Al Jazeera, and in this interview, it was published on Sunday. They're claiming that, they want to restore order in Afghanistan. He says, if we can defeat superpowers, and that's what it looks like, right? That's the optics here. U.S. has put its tail between its legs. It's getting out. And I know we've always had this desire to get our troops out. We had 2,500 remaining, but look at how we are exiting. Look at how we have exited. So for terrorists around the world, it looks like, as they have all of this weaponry, from the Afghan army that we have paid for and have given to them, they've surrounded the one remaining airport there. It looks like the U.S. has been defeated. We're using them. We've given them names of American citizens and Afghans so they can get through security checkbooks, which is insane. But it looks like the U.S. is taking a knee to these terrorists. And they're saying, look, we defeated the mightiest nation on the planet. If we can defeat superpowers, they said, surely we can provide safety to the Afghan people. This is a report that comes from NBC. Check this out.
And this man, Khalil Haqqani, who's now the head of security in Kabul, he is also a wanted terrorist, as Andrea reported, with a $5 million U.S. reward on his head. Now, he told Al Jazeera that the Taliban is ready to provide security for the Afghan people. Obviously, the events of yesterday suggest that the Taliban and Khalil Haqqani may not be up to the job right now.
So, Ken, as we've been reporting, after the Taliban seized power, the group released thousands of prisoners from Afghan jails. Do we know, could that have played any role in yesterday's attacks? And does the Taliban regret that decision?
In fact, Joe, two Taliban officials told our local correspondent in Kabul that, yes, they do regret the way they handled those prison breaks. There were a lot of Taliban prisoners that they wanted to free, but in the course of that, they released hundreds of ISIS-K fighters, including, they said, bomb makers with a lot of expertise in terrorist attacks, and that may be coming back to haunt them right now. ISIS-K is a rival of the Taliban and is more extreme than the Taliban and is believed to have carried out that bombing yesterday and is now giving the U.S. counterterrorism authorities a huge fight on their hands.
What a mess, huh? What a mess. I saw a poll earlier today, and it claims that the American public, 60% of the American public, believe that we're now going to see an increase in the amount of terrorism around the globe. I think CBS did that poll, but let me call you to prayer on that point. It's easy to start to get fearful as we talk about these. I don't want anyone to be afraid. Do not be afraid. Live your life with joy. Live your life with hope. Live your life without fear. Live your life in union with God, and fear will be vanquished. I believe that. And I do believe that our prayers, that our fasting, that our sacrifices, that they change things, that they do. And we need to pray for peace, protection over this country, the conversion of our enemies. And I hear these stories. It's pretty amazing. But we might see greater suffering come our way. 60% of the American public believes we're going to see an increase in terrorism around the globe. Will we see it on our own soil? I hope not. I mean, I hope not. I do have concerns about our border. I do. And that's a whole other issue. I'm not talking immigration. I'm just talking security. You know, they capture, you know, members of MS-13 and others coming across the border. It would be pretty easy to have somebody else with a lot of funding make their way across that border, you know, with some other intelligence as well. Not just some migrant trying to find a job here in the U.S., but somebody with a nefarious intention. So there was a morning consult poll that was done as well, and they found that 45% of Americans believe it would be better for us to remain in Afghanistan if that means we can keep the Taliban in check and keep al-Qaeda from reestablishing a base of operations. I don't know where you stand. That's a little less than one out of two, 45%. And again, I'm not the international expert here, but that's where most Americans are. We're going to speak to Dr. Daniel Kempton coming up. I'd like to get his take on that as well. But final thought here, the withdrawal, right? Let's talk about that just for a quick second. With our withdrawal from Afghanistan, the fact that we are leaving behind billions of dollars worth of weapons and ammunition in the hands of the Taliban, that's going to give them a leg up. I mean, you're putting arrows in their quiver. You're putting bullets in their guns. You're giving them the guns, right? There are photos on Twitter of them, you know, of course, you've probably seen them as well, you wearing U.S. military outfits, carrying our weaponry. There was even some bigger armament that was there that I'm surprised we didn't blow up, that these guys probably don't know how to fly or use, but surely Russia or China can figure that out for them. But who knows? On top of that, the Taliban is they're going to deal with China for the sale of these lithium reserves I talked about. They've been able to take over the largest deposit of lithium in the nation, in the world, in Afghanistan. And those terrorists are going to have a ton of money. They're going to fund their terrorism with that lithium. So, I mean, a lot of prayers needed here. This, of course, is how the international community is going to react. And that's the big question. How will they react? You know, will they intervene to keep the terrorists in their place? What's the future look like for global terrorism? And what's it look like, most importantly, for you at home? I'm joined right now by Dr. Daniel Kempton. He's an award-winning educator, taught international politics at Northern Illinois University. He's published all sorts of works, including on the former Soviet Union and its involvement in South Africa. And, of course, right now he's the vice president of academic affairs at Franciscan University there in Steubenville. Doctor, thank you for your time. Good to talk with you again.
Thanks for having me, Drew.
So, boy, a lot to get into. Let's talk about our departure from Afghanistan. We're leaving Afghanistan, and so are our NATO allies. And I am assuming that the Taliban and ISIS and al-Qaeda, they're going to be expressing their gratitude to us by leaving us alone, right? I doubt that. What are we going to be facing here? I'm being facetious on that point there, but we're getting out. I'm sure they're glad. What's this mean?
Well, it means a lot of things for terrorist organizations. The first thing it means is a horrific scenario for the people of Afghanistan. We shouldn't forget that. Is that they've been living through civil war for 30 years. They've been living through domination by terrorist organizations. And at least for the last 15, 20 years, they had some hope of a brighter future. I think that dissipates quickly. I do think it, unfortunately, most of those people saying it means greater terrorism for the U.S. and the rest of the world are correct. It will take some time for it to have those effects. But having a country where terrorists can go, where they can gather, where they can train without fear of capture, without fear of arrest, is one of the most critical resources any terrorist organization can have. And there are a lot of groups there already, and there's going to be more in the future.
Here's the other aspect that, you know, I think people should really be concerned about. It's not just us that they're going to be after. I mean, the Taliban, they're going to be going after their own citizens, and then al-Qaeda and ISIS will be going after, you know, international targets. Who will the latter two be looking at? I mean, what do you expect, if anything at all?
Well, I think there's variations among these movements, and they're going after each other at times as well, but that doesn't necessarily make things better for us. Because one of the ways terrorist organizations recruit is by killing foreigners. They attract attention. They attract the most radical youths.
Right, right.
So in some ways, ISIS can win over Al-Qaeda or Al-Qaeda can win over ISIS by killing more Americans, by killing more Europeans, killing foreigners, helps them raise money, helps them attract attention, helps them attract followers. So we're in this whether we like it or not. There's nothing we can really do to stay entirely out of it.
So, you know, so it's not only going to be Western countries that they're going to go after, but I'm assuming they're going to also go after Islamic ones. You know, why would they go after their own co-religionists, so to speak, or each other?
Yeah, there are differences here amongst the organizations, but clearly one of the most hated things for Islamist extremists are the moderate governments that have collaborated with support the West. Now, at times they can buy off the terrorist organizations. So it does appear, for example, that at times there's been an understanding between, say, the Saudi government and Al-Qaeda, where the Saudi government would allow the Al-Qaeda organization to raise monies prior to 9/11 in Saudi Arabia. But when that agreement isn't in effect, they'll go after the moderate Muslim governments all over the world because that's where they want to rule. That's where the caliphate belongs in those countries. So in some ways, that's the real target to rule all of the lands once ruled by Muslim governments.
And so is there a strategy for us here, for the U.S., for our allies to take to maybe protect ourselves, or we need to go back in? Some people are suggesting, and I'd love your thoughts on that. Should we go back in? What do you think the right course of action is, and what do we need to do to make sure we're safe at home? I'm concerned about our borders on the south. I mean, if they want to strike at the major city in the U.S., it's more than likely they might be able to get across the border. But your thoughts on those two points?
Well, I'm terrified about our borders right now, but it's not just the borders. I mean, it's very, very hard. You've seen the chaos on the news to know who these people are that are getting access to American flights out. We now have to bring them and quickly vet them, and there's going to be a lot of pressure to do it very quickly. For most of the people that have come into third world, to sites around the world, there's not a lot of paperwork they're bringing with them to know who is who. So it's very possible that the Taliban, Al-Qaeda, ISIS are going to be putting people amongst the refugees that are fleeing. This has happened repeatedly in the past. So the vetting of all that's going to be very important. With an open border, there's the continuing problem of just getting them out of the country and letting them come across the border. So we've left ourselves pretty open. Going back in, in some ways, would be very, very difficult right now. And I would question whether it's moral to do, because what we've shown repeatedly is the American public will support us going in. Mm-hmm. In fact, is sometimes enthusiastic about it.
Yep.
But eventually public support for those policies wane and we get the public pressure to pull them back. And it's not consistent with Catholic teaching on just war theory to go into conflicts if you know your own public support cannot sustain leaving the country better off than when before you arrived, happening.
What about this date, though? We got August 31st. I don't think we're going to leave Americans behind, personally. Okay, so we don't re-engage in a long-term war. Do you think we should go back in, at least, with forces to make sure that we get those who supported us and our fellow citizens out?
We have to do something to make sure that we get the Americans out. I don't know how that's going to happen. It seems increasingly unfeasible that it's all going to happen before August 31st. So, I mean, there's no... The withdrawal, one is tempted to say surrender, was so ill-planned in that this should have been the focus the last 5 or 6 months. I mean, if you go back, the Biden administration keeps referring to, well, President Trump set the date, and Trump actually set an earlier date, but there was a lot more emphasis on pulling the civilians out before the troops withdrew. Yeah. I mean, we sort of have it backwards, pulling out the troops first and then telling the civilians, now you have to leave. So I don't know if we'll keep some staging grounds in the country, but putting a permanent presence back in right now would be very, very difficult and probably very dangerous.
Doctor, just on another front, because we're dealing with Afghanistan, the Middle East has always been a problem. You're an expert also on Russia. We see what's happening in the world today with China flexing its muscles or doing military exercises. I think really trying to communicate and send a strong message to Taiwan. You have concerns about China, its relationship with the Taliban, China, just in terms of its hegemonic vision to ultimately rule and dominate the world. They've got a very expansionistic, approach right now, and you see them in every continent and building up their military as well.
I think it's very true that China, Russia, Iran, none of them are satisfied with the amount of global power or influence they have. All of them are looking at the United States. It's natural. It's happens all the time when we get a new president, for them sort of to test them, to challenge them, to question whether they have the backbone. But unfortunately, the way this has been handled, again, making extreme threats and then not doing something leads to them to push harder rather than push less.
Yeah,
and that's my great fear, is they see this as a moment of opportunity, that the U.S. is divided, it's confused, it doesn't have strong leadership, and to see this as a great opportunity to push their issues elsewhere.
Well, Doctor, I want to thank you for being here. Always just a delight to talk with you. I appreciate your expertise and your insight. Let's pray. I'm going to be praying coming up here in just a few minutes. We'll pray for world peace. Thanks for being with me today. I hope you have a great weekend.
You too, and we all appreciate the prayers. They're so necessary right now. God bless you, Drew.
God bless you. That's Dr. Daniel Kempton. Say a prayer for him as well. I have to take a short pause. As I said, the chaplet is going to be coming up. But more to share with you. Stay with me. This hour is sponsored by Ave Maria Mutual Funds, where financial goals are aligned with pro-life values and fund decisions are based on investment fundamentals designed to preserve and grow wealth without violating moral beliefs. More information at AveMariaFunds.com.
No hype, just hope. The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, hey, thanks for joining me. It's so good to be here with you today. You know, you turn on your television, man, and the news can be overwhelming, hasn't it? I'm going to talk to you just for a moment. I'd love to hear from you, too. How do you maintain your peace in this time of turmoil? Let's dive into that for a second. We'll pray coming up here. That's the number one thing for me. I find peace in prayer. But Maggie and I were just talking during the break. Maggie, why don't you share with everyone what you just shared with me? Because that's news. I didn't realize that.
Yeah, I saw something that the Associated Press had put out about the new governor of New York. You know, Governor Cuomo is no longer in office. And the new governor has acknowledged on her first day in office that the state had nearly 12,000 more deaths from COVID-19 than the previous administration had revealed to the public.
Wow. So they downplay. That's 12,000 deaths?
12,000 deaths, yeah.
Deaths.
Yep.
Wow. A stunning, stunning number. Look, we know that... Well, what a sham that was. So I don't want to go down this path. I mean, the governor is no longer there, but what an absolute tragedy. What an absolute tragedy. My heart goes out to anyone who's lost a loved one as a result of COVID. And, we're not out of the woods yet. I saw an article earlier this morning, with flu season coming, there's going to be a lot of flu. We got the Delta virus. We're going to have a lot of respiratory issues, a lot of other things that are going to be looming in the not-too-distant future. So... do your part. Continue to wash your hands, right? Continue to socially distance when you can. Be very aware of this. My wife and I were talking about this morning. She says, you know something, Drew? She says, it doesn't feel like we're in a pandemic, you know? And that was an observation. She says, not that there isn't, because we have loved ones. We know people who died from COVID. I mean, people who I had a great relationship with who God called home, and COVID was what was the cause of their death. But you look today, you go out, restaurants are packed. People are traveling. I was driving into the studio today, and I couldn't believe the traffic on the roads. I'm like, I remember when I was me and like just a couple cars. I mean, as a broadcaster, I was given, when the lockdown was take place, I was considered an essential worker. I don't put myself at the camp of any of our medical personnel, but I had the ability to get to the studio to broadcast. And the roads were empty. And today I'm thinking, man, it seems like yesterday, doesn't it? Seems like pre-pandemic times, but that's where we are right now. So I want to hit on one issue here. We'll pray the chapel coming up in 7 minutes. And if you want to join me, you can dial in 888-914-9149. I'll take the first five or six or seven calls if we can sneak in. I'm always glad to go ahead and do that. But I was just thinking about the news. I was watching it. And like you, I'm thinking, oh, my gosh, it's horrible when you see, you know, people losing their kids or their spouses, or you're seeing suicide bombers. I mean, somebody's strapping a vest on and going in and killing innocent people, you know. And I know he's doing it out of a warped ideology. He thinks he's going to get 40 virgins when he goes before Allah, you know. And it's insane. We need to pray for the conversion of people. Then you take it back home here. Inflation, that's on the rise, right? You're seeing all sorts of problems just in terms of what is happening within our school systems. You see the divorce rate, you see the dysfunction, you see all the stuff that's happening just across the board. It's easy to lose peace. It seems like things are chaotic and they're swirling out of control. And I was in chapel today, and as I was praying and I went to Mass and then I spent more time with the Lord, I was really reflecting on this because I had struggled with this for a little bit myself. I mean, I had a little, within my heart, I had this angst. I had this lack of peace, right? And I'm thinking, that's not from God. And it really came to me that you and I are called to be apostles, you know? We're to maintain peace in times of turmoil. How do you maintain your peace and your joy? First and foremost, you have to pray. If you don't pray, prayer is to the soul what oxygen is to the body. And if you're not praying, you're not going to have that peace. Don't grow tired in divisive times, okay, to maintain your peace. Be a light. This is our opportunity to be a shining light in the darkness. It's all it takes, you know, all it takes to light up a dark room is a match, right? One candle will pierce the darkness. One match will pierce the darkness. Think of what 1,000 candles will do. It'll banish it. We are called to be that light in this time of darkness. I'm convinced of it. That's what the Lord told me. I really felt, you know what? I'm not going to give in to this. I'm going to rise above it. I'm going to maintain my peace. And I am going to be, in this time of turmoil, a witness to others of what it means to be in a relationship with the Lord. That's what you're called to do, too. You know, Our Lady and many of her apparitions said the same thing. She says, we have to persevere. We really do. We have to persevere in these times of difficulty. I know many are feeling that matters are getting tougher. The spiritual challenges are more intense. Look at the saint today. Look at who we turn to, right? Look at Saint Monica. And we'll talk about that. If you're concerned right now about life in general, if you're praying and your prayers are not being answered, if you're worried about that wayward child, Maggie Green's going to be stopping by after the chapel. This will be a great segment, really, to help give you some perspective on that. But I love St. Monica. I mean, she's a saint for all of us. She really is. She's a saint for every one of us. We have to persist. God's with us. God can change our circumstances in a heartbeat, in a second. But sometimes he wants you to persist. Sometimes he wants you to continue to make your way faithfully in that darkness. Sometimes he wants you to continue that course because he wants you to grow through it. Sometimes those difficult moments prune you because he wants you to blossom all the more, to be an even more beautiful representation of his love and of his mercy. Yeah, so in these dark times, in this time of peacelessness, it's time for us to be, I think, apostles of peace, right? I think that's what we have to do. We have to maintain our peace in these times of turmoil. Decide for it. Decide for Jesus. Let him be your peace. Set out together with him, okay? And be that apostle of peace. How do you do it? You got to pray. Don't grow tired in prayer. I'm telling you, I'm praying for you, you know? We're going to pray together here in a moment. I know there are ladies interceding for you. You know, persevere, do good, and I guarantee you, you're going to see God's plan come to fruition in your life. You're going to see the conversion of others around you. You're going to see that as that chaos and that storm is swirling, you're going to be at a totally different level, a totally different level. The devil would like you to focus on your problems. He'd like you to focus on the turmoil. The devil would like you to, he'd like to rob you of your hope and your joy. He wants you to focus on those money problems you have. He wants you to focus on the politics and the division of the world, the fear about terrorist attacks or possible war. He wants you to worry about that doctor's report. He wants you to worry about the future of your business or what relationship your kid is in. That's what the devil wants you to do. Keep your face to the sunshine, right? And you won't see the shadows. That's what I said. Keep your eyes focused on God, right? That's what you need to do. That's what the sunflowers do, right? So let's pray. I think about Job, too, right? So often, you know, Job, his story is a great one. And I think it's Job 3. I was reading it earlier today as I was praying. He says, "For what I fear overtakes me, and what I shrink from comes upon me." And that's so true. That is so true, unless you walk with God, because love is a magnet for grace. Prayer is what will bring you that peace. Let's pray right now, okay? Let's do that. Let's take a quick pause. When I come back, I'll take your intentions. We'll pray the chaplet. We'll pray for peace in the world and in our homes, and most especially in our hearts. All right? And I have a prayer intention for you, too. I need your prayers today, and I really appreciate it. So when we come back, we'll join together, all right? Stay with me. More straight ahead.